Welcome to Higher Human Performance. It's the rebranded podcast. Used to be Bula Network. Now it's Higher Human Performance because, well, you know the engine behind every business building activity. Yeah, it's people. Today's episode 241, Why Plus Minus Works in Business. Maybe better than it does in hockey. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at Higher Human Performance. Hockey folks argue, well, they argue just like all other sports fanatics do. You know, they second-guess coaches and general managers. Well, I say they, we. They fuss about who deserves to be called the best in any position. And even though they're not as stat-driven as baseball people, well, who is? Hockey people do enjoy a good conversation about how some stats are determined. There is a stat called plus minus, and it is one of the most hotly debated stats in professional hockey circles. Even though today's show is not about hockey, I probably should help you better understand what plus minus is if you don't know, and to give you some sense of the debate. Here's how the NHL looks at it. Quote, a hockey player is awarded a plus each time he is on the ice when his club scores an even strength or shorthanded goal. He receives a minus if he is on the ice for an even strength or shorthanded goal scored by the opposing club. The difference in these numbers is considered the player's plus minus statistic. Here's a simple way to view it. If you're on the ice when the other team scores, you're minus one. If you're on the ice when your team scores, you're plus one. And there are some other details, but for our discussion today, the details they're not important. Ice hockey players who have a poor plus-minus rating hate the stat, and understandably so, because at best it makes them look unimpressive, and at worst it makes them look detrimental. Is that fair? Well, I suppose it depends on how much weight you give this stat. And isn't that like any other stat? You know, some of us put a lot of stock in various and sundry things, even when it comes to business building. And I've run across people who had a propensity for sales, let's say, revenues. All they cared, they were top, we sometimes say about these people, they're top-line driven kind of people. They care about the top line, the sales line, the revenue line. Then there are other people in business, and they're bottom line guys, right? They care about the profits. Yeah, they care about sales, but they're really, really focused on profits. Now, okay, it's the same way in any kind of stat-keeping kind of thing. It's just a barometer. It's perhaps one of many. Players and even general managers in the NHL, they argue that line mates, that is teammates that you play with in hockey, they have an enormous impact on the plus minus stat. I mean, a weak player surrounded by better players can actually have a higher plus minus than a great player who is surrounded by lesser talent. North of the border, and I'm not talking about Oklahoma, I'm talking about Canada, the debate, well, it can grow quite intense. Stat freaks, they will point out the problems with it, and some have even suggested some better alternatives. Let me tell you why I kind of like it in some applications in business. Ice hockey isn't played in a vacuum, argue the opponents of plus minus, and neither is business. But it may be a better stat in business than it is in hockey. Hockey makes the assumption that if a player is on the ice when his team scores, then he's doing better. He's performing better than if he's on the ice when the opponent scores. Okay, so far so good. You with me? But hockey's not an individual sport. A hockey player has teammates playing alongside him, and that's a really crucial element of the game. But a more crucial element of the game is that it resides on the shoulders of a single player. It's kind of like football. Football has a quarterback, And if you ain't got a quarterback, yeah, you really ain't got much of a chance. In hockey, there is such a position as a quarterback. It's the goaltender. And if my goalie is a stud and your goalie, well, he can't stop a beach ball, I'm going to beat you in plus minus every time, and it doesn't matter how spectacular your other players are. Well, okay, business is a team sport too, I could argue, but it's different. I mean, like hockey players, you have individual responsibilities, and your performance may be affected positively or negatively by teammates. Well, okay, tell that to your boss. Next time that you miss the quarter sales quota, walk into your boss and tell him, you know, if I had better teammates, I could have made the number. I would advise you to make sure you have a written resignation in your hand when you do that, by the way. And I would also advise you to have another job lined up. Almost 20 years ago, I began thinking about how sales performance in particular is measured for individual salespeople. And it began with commission-based salespeople. It really began with commission-based retail sales, commission-based kind of guys. And since the late 70s and early 80s, I had been accustomed to a variety of meaningful measurements in order to lead sales teams. Now, in retailing, there have been some long existing telling stats. Closing ratios may be among the most looked at stat among salespeople. It simply means how many prospects out of 10 did you sell? If you talked with 10 people and you sold 3, then your closing ratio is 30%. Today, you mostly hear people call it conversion. How many prospects did you convert into paying customers? In web terms, in online marketing terms, how many visitors to a website, for instance, did you convert to take whatever action you wanted them to take? Produce a landing page, and how many visitors did you get on that page? Out of those visitors, how many opted in to your email list? We're all wrapped up with those kinds of stats. Eyeballs on a web page matter, but not if we're not able to convert them into something that's more meaningful, something we can really do something with, subscribers, email opt-ins, buyers, whatever else you're trying to get people who visit a website to do. In the television world, producers want to attract as many eyeballs as possible so they can sell advertising. And so the more eyeballs on a TV show, the higher the rating of the show, then the higher premium they can charge for a 30-second spot. The advertisers want more eyeballs on their ads so they can drive business. Now, of course, we all know none of us are watching the ads anymore. We're putting things on DVR and we're fast-forwarding through those, but that's another conversation. Maybe a restaurant needs more diners in their restaurant, more drinkers of their beverage, or more shoppers into their showrooms. Whatever it is, you can bet it's being measured 8 ways to Sunday. And even more so today, because we are living in a world of analytics. In fact, in the professional sporting realm, teams that are not steeped in analytics, they find themselves falling dreadfully behind. And even some of those teams that used to kind of poo-poo the idea of analytics are way on board with it now. Conversion is king. We all need to convert shoppers into buyers. And when we focus merely on attracting more prospects and we neglect looking closely at conversion, it's a little bit like working to catch more fish when our holding tank in our boat has a hole in it and we're losing the fish that we already caught. Conversion is this middle of the funnel problem. It's not a top of the funnel problem. Well, in retailing, average ticket. Average ticket would be another common stat that we would look at. If we sell to 10 people and we total up their invoices and then we divide by 10, presto, we have our average ticket amount. The higher, the better. Well, sort of. A higher average ticket assumes that customers are buying more or buying higher end stuff. And it also assumes that profits will go up as ticket prices go up. I mean, you would naturally assume that if somebody buys a $100 item, versus a $200 item, that you're going to make more money on the $200 item. Now, that may not necessarily be true, but for our conversation, we're going to assume that it is. I have seen, by the way, salespeople who had a high average ticket, but they weren't making as many sales as their teammates because, well, what we called it is they were cherry picking. They were cherry picking shoppers. And if a shopper was interested in something that wasn't high end, well, they'd abandon that person as quickly as they could. Now, that's pathetic customer service, but it results in a higher average ticket. So see, there's proof right there that all that glitters ain't gold, and things are not always as they appear. So you got to be careful with stats. I like plus minus in some situations because it assumes an equal opportunity for everybody. And leaders should do everything to make sure people have the best opportunity for success. I believe that that is a primary goal of a good leader. And I don't care if we're talking about coaching an athletic team or if we're talking about leading a business, putting people in the best position possible for an opportunity to succeed. That's the job. Now, they don't always do that because sometimes leaders will let their preference for some people override their sensibilities and their obligations toward fairness. Since I started out using sales as the example, let's just stick with that, because in selling, not all opportunities are equal. I mean, all you have to do is go visit any outside sales force, and you will quickly hear about Joe and his luck in having the best territory in the company. I mean, I've heard it over and over. He wins every year. Well, I would too if I had his territory. And maybe they're right. But maybe Joe built the territory. Or maybe Bill retired 3 years ago after he created the number one territory in the company and Joe inherited it. You know, that does happen. Now, would plus minus help in looking at Joe versus his coworkers? Not likely. But there are lots of sales situations where it might work wonderfully. And again, I am not saying that we should throw one stat in the center of the ring and, you know, do the happy dance around that one stat and only that one stat. It's merely one way of measuring some things. Let's say 10 guys are working in a car dealership in the new car sales department. They're all working 6 days a week. They all put in about 50 hours a week. They're all selling the same inventory. They're all at the same location. Okay, but they have different experiences. They have different skills. They have different client bases. Plus minus can help us examine and put the attention on contributions, and that's why I like it. Now, on the downside for the salesperson, it can also focus attention on deficiencies, and that's why you likely get resistance anytime there's a stat that salespeople look at that can, well, they can show them to not be quite as great as they think they are. We can judge all 10 car salespeople equally with a plus-minus measurement. You could argue about whether we ought to judge them all equally if you like. I don't like it because then we start getting into all this subjective nonsense. And for me, as a manager, as a leader, I hate that. You know, I think it's a poor tactic for a sales manager to confront a salesperson and say, I think you can do better. Well, I mean, if I'm the salesperson, I'm saying to myself, you think? I mean, based on what? Now, on the flip side, a less experienced car salesperson could argue, well, man, I've only been selling cars for 8 months. The top guy, he's been selling cars for over a decade, and you're going to measure me by his standard? And I've been asked this question before, by the way. My response is and would continue to be, well, then how should you be judged? Yeah, that's what I get, silence. You know, maybe there are no perfect measurements or stats in anything, but some clearly are more meaningful than others. Sales organizations are notorious for establishing indiscriminate quotas based on feelings or thoughts. I have sat in way too many meetings where leaders wanted to give one guy a higher quota because, well, he's got experience, or we perceive he's got these skills. And at the same meeting, they want to give a lower quota to a person that they feel is less capable, but may have been on the job just as long. I don't understand the fairness in that. I don't see the fairness in that. And I don't think it is fair. I think it overburdens the more skillful and it underburdens the less skilled. You know, let's let the chips fall where they may, shall we? You remember the old curve grading in school? If you were at the bottom of the curve, well, you hated curve grading. If you were at the top, you loved it. Well, of course, you know, there's going to be some brainiac in the class that's going to get 100, going to get a perfect score, and now all the rest of us who aren't brainiacs, we're all going to suffer. I mean, if only we'd been assigned to a class of morons, we could have had higher grades because, well, we're not a moron. We could shine amongst a sea of morons, but now you've thrown us in the class with this cat over here who can do 100. Didn't have anything to do with our lack of study or preparation. We were just simply outmatched by some genius. Story of my life. Here's what I think matters in our companies when it comes to measuring performance. Who is performing above average? Who is performing below average? I'm not suggesting that we focus solely on averages, mind you. But we do have to have some way of examining typical or average. Now, let's suppose that we've got 15 salespeople and our total monthly sales are $2.43 million. If our sales team is performing identically, then each salesperson will have produced gross sales of $162,000 for the month. We just take the total, $2.43 million, divided by 15. Everybody did $162,000 in gross sales. But you and I both know that that's not the case. No sales team is identical, including our hypothetical one here. Well, we take a closer look at our 15 salespeople, and we discover something astonishing. Four of the 15 have brought in just under $2 million. Wait a minute, what? Our sales were only $2.43 million, and four out of the 15 brought in just under $2 million? That left the other 11 to bring in only $440,000. Talk about a disparity that will blow your mind. These things happen. These things happen all the time in the world of selling. Trust me. The average, the total sales divided by the total number of salespeople, may not tell us the whole story. But the story it does tell is pretty compelling because guess what? Four of our people are blowing the average away. Well, the average, I just gave you the average. The average is $162,000. If everybody sold $162,000, all 15 people, presto, there's our sales of $2.43 million. But that isn't what happened. Four people sold nearly $2 million. Talk about blowing the scale sky high. If that's the average, 162, okay, and it is. You know what this means? It means we've got 11 players who appear to be averaging only $40,000. That's right. $40,000 instead of the 162 that's the mathematical average. That means they're performing at 25% of the average. Four people on our team produced $1.99 million. They're averaging almost $500,000 each. That's three times the average. It's over three times the average. That's about 210% over the average. You talk about some overachievers, bring those four people in and, man, let's have a parade. Over eight times the productivity of their 11 coworkers. Now think about this. Lots of costs associated with those 11. we're probably not supporting the four superstars as well as we should, because we're carrying too much cost with those 11. Yeah, but wait a minute, we're not finished. We really have to examine each player. Of the 11, we've got one who is performing better than the rest. Her name's Mary. Mary is still not hitting the average, mind you. She is still not hitting the $162,000 a month, but she's far and away doing better than the other 10. She's still a minus player because she's still below average, but she's not as minus as most. And on top of that, she's the person with the least amount of experience or seniority. And we think with a little bit of help, we think with a little bit of coaching, with a little bit of mentoring, she could climb out of this pit of averageness where she is wallowing. And so we decide we're going to make an investment in her. We are going to pair her up with a mentor from among those top four. And so we bring her in and we challenge her to learn all she can. Well, another of the 11 has historically been above average, but recently his performance has slipped. And his name is Luke, and Luke was never top tier, but he was always consistently above average. He was always a plus player, but something's happened. Something has happened over the last 60 days or so, and he has slipped. He's not an average. He's not an above average player. We need to find out. So we bring him in. We begin having some conversation. Turns out he's had some personal issues with aging parents. He's had to devote more and more of his time away from the work to care for a father whose health is failing. And he and his wife, they took in his aging parents 3 months ago. And since then, well, his life has been turned upside down. Now it's showing strongly in his work. Well, over time, it becomes very clear to us as management that we need to support the people with higher performance more. And so we decide it's time to divide responsibilities and to get a better grasp of our own commitment to our own customers. The company decides we need to restructure responsibilities. We need to reassign some accounts. And we devise this plan. We devise a new way of working. Luke's the above average player. He's typically been the plus player, but now he's not. He's dealing with the aging father. We promote him to a new position inside the company. We decide for Luke's life and for our performance and for our customers, we just need to get Luke off the road, and we need to let him spearhead about 80% of the accounts that previously were handled by those 11 bottom feeders, those poor performers. These are accounts that range from small to potentially large. And there's no arguing the history, though, and the company feels that Luke might be able to provide better service and support virtually than a larger team wasting its time traveling all over the place. And besides, we're going to give him two assistants, and together, this team of three, they're going to be able to really concentrate on helping develop these accounts. In some cases, we're hoping that they'll be able to get these accounts built back up to a prior status. In other cases, we're hoping that they can grow some accounts to a much larger status. The two assistants, by the way, they're among some of those 11. And they happily accept their new roles because, well, their bonuses are going to be team-based. And they, too, they're no longer going to be on the road. So now we have accounted for four of the 11. They're now situated. Seven, well, they remain on the block to be cut from the team or reassigned. Now, five superstars, well, four really, but don't forget, we put Mary with a mentor. And so there's five of them, four plus her in training. They are on the road, and they're responsible for the bulk of the monthly revenues. We know that because we've got history to prove it. The accounts that have historically been bringing in the bulk of the revenue, they're divided among this team. Three others are going to be at HQ. That's Luke and his two helpers, and they're going to handle all the rest of the accounts. Yeah, you've got the number. 5 plus 3. There's 8. We now have 8. We don't have 15. We check in 6 months later, and here's what we see. The five road warriors, well, they have found a new level of success. The company has poured resources into them, fostering a greater sense of unparalleled service and support. And customers are responding exactly the way we hoped they would, positively. Sales are up over 30%. This group of five, they are now responsible for monthly sales that exceed $2.7 million. The differences between the five, it fluctuates month to month as one person climbs to the top and takes the top honors. But you know what? Next month, somebody else does. There is no more than 15% difference among them, the five road warriors, from top to bottom. The inside team, that team of three, well, it's a team of two led by Luke, they are doing exceptionally well. I mean, Luke has even hired a fourth person to join the team because of the success. Part of the 30% increase of the road warriors, by the way, that's due to Luke and his hard work to develop two critical accounts that had slipped in recent months. Luke, well, he nursed them back to a state where they were assigned to a road warrior. Oh, his team didn't suffer from it. His team was compensated for their success. They were not penalized. The company paid the entire team a nice quarterly bonus when it moved those two accounts. And that fuels Luke. That fuels he and his team to see if they can do more of that in the future. Can we grow an account so that we can turn it over to a road warrior? Because they're still handling internal support for everybody. Last month, the company gathered all the people in sales, Luke with his three people, the five road warriors, nine now in total, nine doing more than 15 were doing before. The company is working out a plan to fairly compensate the entire team for the sales success because the company is still learning. This is all rather new. Luke drafted a plan to not just serve the accounts that weren't being handled by the road team, but to support all the accounts. It's now in about its third stage of revisions, but everybody's excited about the prospect of more growth, well, and obviously higher paychecks all the way around. No, it doesn't always go this way. And I've not talked about the bad news of the seven people whose jobs were at risk because, well, they were performing in a minus situation, woefully below average. But the truth is, people are either contributing to the success of an enterprise or they are a negative influence detracting from the enterprise's ability to succeed. I would argue that no one is neutral. I haven't seen a situation or a person who is just neutral. That is, they're not draining, nor are they contributing. They're just what hockey would call an even player. I'm not arguing that we should terminate all the players who are below average, but I am arguing that we'd better figure out why they are not at least average. Soar with your strengths. It's a philosophy that I have led by for decades because it works and I believe in it. Give me those top tier performers. Give me those four people and let me pour resources to help them achieve just 5% more per person, I'll conquer the market. Plus minus lets us determine who's helping and who's costing. But you know, better than that, it gives us a measurement that we can use to manage the performance of our work. People want to contribute. Now, you may not believe that. I do. I come from a place and I come from a mindset that believes people want to contribute. People want to excel. Too often, sales management in particular is about arbitrary quotas that frustrate salespeople. "You're not supposed to hit it," he said to me. I was a young road warrior, busting my tail to hit quotas that just seemed impossible. Well, because they were. I just didn't know it. The company had made sure of it. And when the VP told me that I was not supposed to hit the number, you would have thought relief would have come sweeping over me, but it didn't. Instead, I felt lost. I felt stupid and lost. Well, I felt angry. Here I had been working feverishly to accomplish a goal that I thought somebody smarter than me had devised. Surely they know something I don't. So I went for it, and I failed. Now, after hearing, "You're not supposed to hit it," well, I no longer trusted my employer. And I found it difficult to work so hard for them anymore. I mean, I'd been betrayed by a company that was playing a game they never let me in on. They lied to me. Had I been allowed to see where I stood relative to something that was measurable and fair, I'd have continued to bust my backside. But the truth was, in my circumstances, there was only one way to know if you were doing a good job, if you were contributing or not. And that was whether or not the VP told you you were. I mean, it was all just far too subjective for me. Now, plus minus may mean it may look different for you. So I don't want you to get too hung up in all the details. I would encourage you, rather, to find ways to analyze the performance of your sales team so that you can be certain about the contributors. My main point years ago in coming up with this and some other tools was so I could move away from the, "I think you're doing a good job" kind of leadership, which really to me is no leadership at all. My innate belief that people want to contribute, it has led me to devise tools and plans that would foster people to perform at a higher level than they might otherwise. That was the goal. We all need feedback. We all need positive reinforcement that what we're doing is working or that it's the right thing. Leaders and managers who neglect to come up with or embrace anything that's available to accomplish that, in my opinion, they're letting their people down. Your people deserve to know if they're making a positive difference, and they deserve to be supported so that they can make an even bigger positive difference in the future. I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast, Higher Human Performance. There are links over at the website, BulaNetwork.com. By the way, HigherHumanPerformance.com will get you to the same place. You can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes or Stitcher. Higher Human Performance newsletter, probably a monthly affair now. Plug in your email address and I'll make sure that you're on the list there as well. Those are my calls to action. No, I don't measure it much, but if you've listened to me for any length of time, you knew that already. I appreciate you listening. And hopefully moving forward, we're going to produce some content that is going to help you with the people side of all this business building stuff. Because really, we still are about the trifecta of business building, and that is getting new customers, serving existing customers better, and not going crazy in the process. My name is Randy Cantrell. I'm coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, inside the Yellow Studio.